Hello and welcome to episode 7 of A Noise from the Deep, the Greenleaf Music Podcast. My name is Michael Bates and I'm here with trumpeter and composer Dave Douglas.
Hi Michael, how you doing?
Very well.
This is a good one.
Mm-hmm.
The saxophonist composer J.D. Allen is going to be with us and we'll be listening to his music and hearing a lot of ideas about where his music is coming from.
Yes. J.D. Allen, Michael Bates calling.
Hey, what's up, Michael? How you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm okay, man.
J.D., this is Dave Douglas on the line.
Dave, how you doing, man?
Good. Long time.
Yeah, long time.
So, let's get to it. It's a new record. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thanks a lot. Yeah, it is neat to put one out, as you guys know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I accept that. Congratulations. Thank you.
You know, the big news is the addition of the piano.
Yeah, about time.
Did it affect the open nature of the band, the way, you know, it was really open with the trio? Did the piano change that at all?
No, it was just, it was kind of like, adding another exponent to the math equation, you know, just making room for one more voice.
Mm-hmm.
So it was still kind of the same program in terms of being limber and loose, but maybe I would have to leave a little more space for the piano to interject. Just adding another family member, you know, that's basically what it was. Set another place at the table, that's all.
Do you think, like, do you feel like you approached the harmony differently because you had him playing on it?
I did. I was kind of going through a thing, and why I hadn't used piano for such a long time is because, you know, after a while, when you listen to music, and particularly in improvised music, and I guess even in classical music, you kind of can really tell a C7 or D7 or D7. So I kind of got into this thing where I was trying to construct chords. And I didn't necessarily nail it on this record, but after doing this, I have a better idea of what I have to do for the next recording. So I kind of came with some preset things that I wanted in terms of harmony that might sound out to the person listening, but it was actually all some stuff that was actually kind of planned out.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, just trying to get away from, just trying to juggle the 12 notes in a different way. You know, I'm trying my best to do that. And I have found while doing this that coming up with 12-tone roles, actually Michael had introduced me to this book called The Composer by David Cope.
Yeah,
and
I love that book.
Yeah, I picked it up. And I was 12-tone roles. It got into the matrix and all this kind of things. And I realized that if I put enough roles together, I can actually come up with some type of harmony. Just trying to shade it in a different way and add an element of mystery to the music. That's what I like to hear anyway.
Thank you.
I guess when I hear you talking about the harmony and using the rows and all that stuff, I wonder how much, you know, what you put together on this record as as far as the approach to the group and to bringing in the piano, how much of that comes from your playing, you know, comes from naturally what you do as a horn player?
Yeah, of course, some natural things came through. I mean, that's the beauty of improvisation, but there were some thought-out things that I had planned that I wanted to get across just for my growth, you know.
Right, yeah. So the music that you were referring to where you had sort of the set rows, what's an example on that album? My guess is it's going to be that tune Polestar.
Polestar, definitely, yes. Chagall, Mass, the first tune. If you listen to Mass, and the first tune, and actually the last tune on the record, which is called Little Dipper, they're actually the same tune. Okay. And if you check out Dezron, he's actually playing the same thing that he's playing in the first tune. So that would kind of give you an idea that there was a plan. It wasn't just rolling the dice, you know. And then sometimes we had like maybe there was a section within the improvisation that there was a set harmony things, and we played around with that. Mm-hmm. I would probably give a cue, and we would just playing with forms and getting kind of like the Don Cherry thing that I did with Dave Douglas a few years back was a big inspiration for me, which is the beauty of having something set and not being afraid to leave that. And if we never play that again, that's cool. We know we have a base that we can go back to, but we reserve the right to be free also. So it was weird, man. So, and like it took a while in the studio to get, because I'd never really, I played with each one of them in different situations, but never in this situation. So we recorded the album like 50 times, you know, in one day. You know, we did it over and over and over and over, and then I just went back and found what, you know, was acceptable to put out.
Well, but, I mean, you...
They thought I was crazy, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's, yeah. Maybe that goes without saying for all of us. But it's interesting to hear you mention the Don Cherry music that we played together. And,
yeah.
And I guess, you know, listening to this record and the project, there is a big... story behind that. You know, there's a larger structure and a larger form that's being told, and that's clearly something that you spent a lot of time thinking about and laying out. So when you did all those takes and you put it all together, I would imagine that at every moment when you were playing and when you were hearing the band playing, it was part of that bigger structure, right?
Exactly. Yes. Yes. And it was, the only way it worked, it was like this. We were playing it, and everyone, we were doing our thing, you know, we were doing the thing, and then it didn't really gel until I told them. I said, look, man, to imagine that we're all in one room, and we all have our own radios, and we're turning the dial, trying to find something that could work together. Huh. And when I said that, for some reason, that it started working.
Wow.
You know, I think a great example of that is the tune Chagall. On top of the harmonic thing that's happening, there's a rhythmic thing happening with everybody. Mm-hmm. And it sounds to me, at least, that everybody's playing in their own different meters at the same time.
Exactly.
And then people seem to switch roles, if I'm not mistaken.
You're absolutely right. And I had heard that Anthony Braxton was into that. I read something, and I thought that was really interesting. It just seemed to me, it was like, look, let's just play pulse as a means of improvising. You know, we don't play the harmony because we play on these harmonic instruments, but let's play with pulse, you know. And then so with Chagall in particular, I gave Eldar like a big tone, and I said, when you get to the end of the fifth measure, just repeat it, go backwards, and just keep going back and forth, and then Desron had that. But so long as we weren't playing the same pulse at the same time, you know, like inhabit your own little space, but react to what the next guy is doing. And we got to it on Chagall. Thank you. My intention was the whole record was supposed to sound like Chagall, you know. So it was, I mean, we were all sweating. We didn't know how it was going to turn out.
That's funny. So great. I want to talk about a couple of your earlier compositions, if you don't mind.
No problem.
You know, I've played a little bit of your music, and there's this one tune that I keep coming back to, and it's that tune, Angel. You have a lot of pieces that I guess I could describe as modular, or like they have movable forms. And that was a big influence for me when I heard that. And essentially it's got some cues and triggers here and there from different sections. Could you talk about that?
Yeah, it was actually, that tune came about as a result of meeting Ornette Coleman. It might not sound like it, but I had the opportunity to go to his house, and we hung out for 6 hours, and he gave me these group of, he gave me like 12 notes or 4 chords. And, you know, he said, yeah, I'm going to give you these notes, and this is going to make you sound like you're not going to be playing a saxophone after this. So I put this melody together, and then I said, well, you know, I would like to play changes, but then at some point I would like to not play changes. And the movable form idea is just basically what you said, just you have a couple cues, not something where you got to look at the guy and say, okay, now we're about to do it. Just something that the band knows, real small and you know, not obvious. And you basically just play it, and it could be the cue to a third ending or a fourth ending or, you know, cue to the top. And that was basically it. So it was different every time we played it, or at least we tried to make it different. Mm-hmm. And it's a lot of fun doing that, you know, when everybody knows what's happening.
Are you still approaching playing live similarly, in sort of stringing together tunes, no set list, everybody has the music internalized to some degree?
Well, that's the goal, and particularly with this record, I mean, basically, if you listen to it, there's really only 3 tunes on the whole record, you know?
Wow.
It's really just 3 tunes, and what I would like is when someone put this record on, I would like them to have the feeling of walking into a club and the music is just happening right away. No setup, no nothing. You walking right into it as soon as you open the door. So that being said, it's not a compositional thing. It's more of us learning how to play together, you know, getting to something or getting to an idea, you know. So there's not a lot for the guys to remember. It's just they got to remember to try something different every time we play these 3 or 4 tunes, you know, which is a challenge in itself. Which is why everyone was going crazy.
That's why you recorded the album how many times?
50 times.
50 times.
I bet it was internalized by the end of that afternoon.
Oh, yeah, we don't need to rehearse now. We're cool.
Yeah, right. No more rehearsals. Well, listen, if you ever need a trumpet player, you just let me know. It sounds like a lot of fun.
Oh, man, I'd be honored, man. I mean, I stole most of the stuff from you when I was playing with you anyway.
Oh, please.
Man.
No, that's not... Well, we did play Symphony for Improvisers, the Don Cherry
long form piece.
And there is a lot of that sort of modular element to it, but it sounds to me like you've taken it to a whole nother level.
Oh, I'm trying, man. I'm trying to hang on, you know. But I have to say this, and I thought about it. I remember one particular show we did that actually tricked me out, and I wanted to bring this up. We played at the Stone with Harry Grimes, and we were playing, man, we were taking it out there, and then all of a sudden, Harry Grimes started walking bass.
Right.
It was the oddest thing in the world. And I was like, oh, that's an idea, you know, and I kept that, you know, huh. I like that, you know.
Right, well, everything is relative, right, when walking is the oddest thing that could happen.
Yeah.
That was with Joey Barron on that gig, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
That was fun.
Yeah, it was. Man, it tripped me out, man.
Yeah, nice.
Oh, what a blast.
It's great talking to you, JD. It's great to hear the music.
Yeah. Thank you, guys. Thank you for checking it out. I really appreciate that, and it means a lot to me that you would take the time to listen to it.
Oh,
thank
it's a great
you so
record,
much.
Man. Congratulations.
And sure. I enjoy you guys' work also. I keep up on what you guys are doing, too. So I love to hear your music also, man. Thank you.
See you soon. Okay.
All right.
Bye now.
So that was a very fascinating conversation with J.D. Allen, great saxophone player.
Thank you, J.D., for joining us.
Yeah, great to have you. We're going to now move on and talk about some listener emails that we've received. I recently got one from a saxophone player, actually from Toronto, Canada. In our interview with Miles Okazaki, he had been talking about Bach. And another thing that he had mentioned, Miles mentioned in the interview, was sort of his relationship with social media. And putting stuff out there and sort of seeing what comes back. And in a lot of ways, that's what we're doing here at A Noise from the Deep. And Trevor was listening to the podcast, heard this thing, and decided that, you know, he has this recording of a French violinist, not super well known, and has done the solo sonatas and partitas for violin. And he sent along a really, truly incredible recording of that music. So I thought we'd play some of it here. Thank you. And you are listening to the music of Bach, performed by Francois Fernandez from France.
And is that available somewhere? Or?
I don't know if it is, actually.
I got the sense from Trevor that maybe that is just a private recording.
Yeah. So I'll do some more research on that, you know.
Sounds good. I got some feedback about the Henry Threadgill episode. This was not via email, but, you know, via people that I've seen out there in my travels. That a couple people asked me about the tour bus and whether it was true that they drove across the country and everybody took turns driving 3 hours. And I believe it is. I was in Chicago recently. I was working at Columbia College, and a young trumpet player asked me what he should be listening to, which is great. I was like, how much time you got? So it's always great to share, you know, favorite musicians, favorite recordings. And he wasn't that familiar with Woody Shaw, which was surprising for a young trumpet player. I mean, he knew him, but everybody, I think a lot of trumpet players that are sort of my colleagues idolize Woody Shaw, and he's
for good reason too.
Very important to a lot of us, and maybe not as well known as he should be. So, I just wanted to play some examples of some Woody Shaw. The first one is this Booker Irvin record that's called Textbook Tenor, and it's interesting because he's very young. But he's already developed a pretty advanced chromatic language for playing. And he's doing it at a medium tempo. It's like a lot of the later recordings of Woody Shaw, you hear him do it and it's so fast,
burning,
it's almost impossible to hear what the notes are on the inside. So on this recording, you kind of hear in a slowed down version what all that stuff is. So that's Woody Shaw soloing on a record by Booker Irvin. This next example is from the Larry Young record that's called Unity. And it's Elvin Jones on drums, Larry Young on organ, and Joe Henderson on saxophone. And they play one of Woody Shaw's early tunes, Beyond All Limits. Thank you. So that's Woody Shaw's composition, Beyond All Limits. Unfortunately, not listening to it on vinyl, but from a CD and an excerpt, just since we're talking about Woody Shaw and what an important player he is, and how, you know, if you haven't checked him out, you don't have to be a trumpet player, I think, to find this music wonderful and fascinating. So there's a musician named Horace Silver, who probably people listening to this podcast know who that is. I was fortunate enough to play with him, and my hero at that time was Woody Shaw, who had played in Horace Silver's band. So I was doing a lot of emulating, which I don't, you know, I was a young musician. I don't know. It's always difficult to know, you know, how much emulating is appropriate and how much you should try to sound like yourself if you can, or how much you try to fulfill the needs and wishes of the band leader. So I learned a lot about that playing in Horace's band. But here's a great example of Woody Shaw playing Horace Silver's music on the record Cape Verdean Blues. So that's a wonderful Woody Shaw solo right there, and I just thought this mini survey of Woody Shaw would not be complete without playing one of his records. Sure. and one of his compositions. So this is the great record Woody 3 from the Columbia years in the late 70s, and it's his blues To Kill a Brick.
Let's go out with that. You've been listening to A Noise from the Deep. I'm Michael Bates.
I'm Dave Douglas, and this has been episode 7. Thanks.